Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada.
An election for the president of the Palestinian Authority was held last Sunday. Before and after the election, the mainstream media, who barely acknowledge the realities of Palestinian life under Israeli occupation, showcased the election and gleefully welcomed the victory of Mahmoud Abbas. The media, Sharon, and Bush all spoke of the promise of peace. To examine what's behind the smoke and mirrors, we've contacted Ali Abu Nima in Chicago. Ali is a Palestinian journalist and co-founder of Electronic Intifada. Welcome again to Red Eye, Ali.
Thank you.
Theoretically, peace negotiations will affect the interests of all Palestinians, but how many Palestinians were even eligible to vote for their lead negotiator, so to speak?
Well, that's a good question, which you won't get answered from the mainstream media for the most part. In the occupied territories, there are 3.5 million Palestinians approximately, and about 1.7, 1.8 million of the age where they would be eligible voters. Only 1 million of those eligible voters bothered to register in this election, and the number who voted were 775,146, according to the Palestine Central Election Commission. What that means is that only 46% of eligible voters in the occupied territories took part, much less than the stunning exercise in democracy that was supposed to take place. It's also notable that the Associated Press is reporting this morning that two senior officials in the Central Elections Commission have resigned in protest at the massive irregularities, and in particular the pressure they faced from Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah movement in order to ensure that that candidate not only won but had the appearance of a massive landslide. And a final point is that only a third of Palestinians actually live in the occupied territories. Two-thirds of the Palestinian people live as exiles and refugees. There are millions of refugees in the surrounding countries, in Jordan, in Syria, in Lebanon, and of course in Canada and the United States, who were not allowed to participate in the election, which is strange given the efforts being made to allow Iraqis to vote in that country's elections and the efforts that were made to allow Afghans to vote in their country's election in October. Strange silence about giving Palestinian refugees a vote from the international community.
What about residents inside the Green Line?
Well, Palestinians who live in what is Israel, inside the 1948 borders of Israel, couldn't vote either. They are Israeli citizens, albeit second-class citizens, and vote in Israeli Knesset elections. So they couldn't vote either. So only a small part of the Palestinian people were even invited to vote, and fewer than half of those who were invited bothered to take up the invitation.
And what about the difference between registered voters versus unregistered voters?
Well, the Central Election Commission says that 70% of registered voters registered. And if we believe their numbers, then you know that's about right. 775,000 out of about 1,100,000 registered voters. But registration is a process that took place over many months, and big efforts were made. And it's a voluntary process. And a significant number of the eligible voters, a third of them, did not bother to register. They didn't see this election as being significant enough to have an impact on their lives. And I think that was amply demonstrated when the very next day after the election, the Israeli army revealed a plan to demolish the homes of 3,000 more 3,000 more homes of Palestinian refugees in the Rafah refugee camp in the southern Gaza Strip as part of Israel's plan to completely seal the Gaza Strip from the outside world and turn it into a giant prison. So the Israelis brazenly made that announcement the day after the election, and of course the Palestinian Authority president has no power or no means to protect those Palestinians or to protect any other Palestinians who continue to see their land stolen on a daily basis for the construction of Jewish-only settlements.
What response came from the election officials from the low voter turnout on the day of the election?
Well, what happened on the day of the election, and Electronic Intifada reported on it hour by hour, and we had two people, one in Gaza and one in near Hebron in the West Bank, in addition to many other reports we've published. What happened on the day was the turnout was so low that under pressure from Fatah, this is the account that has been given by these election officials who resigned, is that in the middle of the day, or rather towards the end of polling day, under pressure from Fatah, the Central Election Commission changed the rules and said that you didn't have to be a registered voter anymore, and anyone could go and vote just using an identity card, even if they weren't registered at that polling station, which, of course, Canadians will know since they have a registry-based system that, you know, the register is what guarantees that you really are entitled to vote in that constituency and that you only vote once. And so there have been many credible reports after that change was made of Palestinian security officers loyal to Abbas being bussed around to vote in multiple polling stations. So that's what happened on polling day in a desperate attempt to boost the turnout. But at the end of the day, the turnout was still less than half the number of eligible voters, even though they extended polling as well by 2 hours.
Why was the registration turnout so low in a population that is highly politically conscious and active?
Well, because I think Palestinians understand for the most part that that these elections have no impact on their life. It's like electing, you know, it's purely symbolic, and I think many Palestinians also feel that there is this effort by the international community to really redefine the problem. It's not about Israel's occupation or violations of international law, the continued construction of settlements. We hear no more about Israel's violation of UN resolutions. Now we're being told the problem is Palestinian leadership and that there's a need for Palestinian reform. And this is, I think, many Palestinians see this as an Israeli-American agenda to blame themselves for their own situation and relieve Israel of any pressure. And I think many Palestinians simply have had enough of that game and didn't want to play into it by participating in a charade.
Why have the Israelis and the U.S. been so positive about the election and Mahmoud Abbas?
Well, I think for the Americans, they will simply do what is convenient for Israel, not out of any deep conviction of Israel's cause, but simply because for American politicians, it's too costly to put any pressure on Israel. I think for the Israelis, it's a win-win situation. They can present Abbas, you know, if Abbas lives up to the propaganda that he's a moderate and agrees to try to end the Intifada, the Palestinian uprising, which is the most serious problem Israel faces, then that's great for them. If they have a local Palestinian leader who's willing to do their dirty work to crush opposition to the occupation so that Israel can continue to build settlements in peace and quiet, that's great. If, on the other hand, Abbas fails to do that, and he will fail to do that because he just doesn't have the means to do it, then Israel can say, look, the Palestinians haven't changed, they're still terrorists, and we have no partner. So for a mixture of reasons, but I would say those are the main ones.
How would the election affect the perspective of the occupation as the obstacle to peace?
Well, the election plays into the idea that, sinner heal thyself, that the Palestinians are the ones who are the cause of the problem. And all this talk of reform and democracy fits into a broader U.S. agenda to redefine the Middle East in its interests. So democracy in Palestine doesn't mean ending the Israeli occupation and foreign military occupation, as Palestinians have been living it, is the most brutal form of tyranny and absolutely anathema to the concept of democracy. And yet we are now hearing this strange new definition of democracy where under military occupation, when people aren't even free to leave their homes, you can have democracy. And I think this is trying to give legitimacy to the larger project the United States has in the Middle East, and using the Palestinians to an extent as guinea pigs for it.
What were the Israelis doing during the election campaign that we barely heard about?
Well, the Israelis, first of all, back in September, when the Palestinian Central Election Commission was first going out and registering Palestinian voters, the Israelis did a lot to sabotage their work, and this is one reason also perhaps why some Palestinians did not register, especially in Jerusalem. The Israelis actually shut down the offices of the Palestinian Election Commission and arrested Palestinian workers for the crime of trying to register voters. During the campaign, the Israelis maintained all of the apparatus of the occupation, the checkpoints, the Jewish-only settler roads, the curfews, and so on, and the blockades, which meant that Palestinians couldn't really campaign. And we saw in the municipal elections, which were held in parts of the West Bank a few weeks before the presidential election, that the Israelis actually arrested a number of candidates. That anyone who came out into the open to campaign that they didn't like, they simply arrested them. And on polling day itself, there were numerous reports in many areas of Palestinians unable to reach polling stations who wanted to vote. This wasn't as widespread as some people had feared, but it did take place, particularly in villages in the north of the West Bank, around Nablus and Tulkarem, and in the area around Hebron as well, and most notably in Jerusalem, where the Israelis made it virtually impossible for most Palestinians in Jerusalem, which, as I pointed out, is the largest Palestinian city in the West Bank. They made it impossible for people there to vote.
During the election campaign, there were several political alternatives, some participating to challenge Abbas, like Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, who got 20% of the vote, some calling for a boycott, like Hamas. The process was peaceful and lively. What does this tell us about Palestinian political culture?
Well, that's right. I think that's a good point. And I should have pointed out that Dr. Mustafa Barghouti was arrested several times for trying to campaign in Jerusalem, and his movements were severely restricted. Several other candidates whose homes are in the Gaza Strip were not allowed by Israel to leave the Gaza Strip, so they couldn't campaign freely either. And despite also other elements from the Palestinian Authority side that made it difficult to have a free campaign, the fact that the Palestinian security services and civil service openly sided with Abbas, despite this, what we saw was that Palestinians can disagree, have very different ideological views, and even under the most extreme circumstances of occupation, do so for the most part respectfully, without any violence whatsoever among themselves. And this is despite massive Israeli efforts over the years to foment and foster Palestinian civil war.
Before the presidential election, there were local elections and more scheduled. Also scheduled are elections for the Palestinian National Assembly. What significance do these other elections have?
Well, you have to be careful when you say Palestinian National Assembly. What it is the Palestinian Legislative Council, which again was created under the Oslo Accords and which has very limited power. So again, this is a symbolic election. You have to bear in mind that in the occupied territories, elections for student councils in the universities have enormous political significance, not because the student councils do much for people in the broad community, but because they're a symbolic exercise which allows people to register their allegiance to this or that position. And the Legislative Council has the same role. And it's important to note that, again, these elections are only for Palestinians in the occupied territories, and the majority of the Palestinian people remain absolutely disenfranchised. The local elections a few weeks ago were held for town councils in parts of the West Bank, and the Palestinian Authority decided to hold them only in the areas where the ruling Fatah movement, which was seen as strongholds for the ruling Fatah movement. And what happened to their surprise was that Hamas and other Islamicist movements scored very significant totals, vote totals, in those areas. And that's one of the reasons why the Palestinian Authority has refused for so long to hold municipal elections, because of the fear they have that in those contests that are harder to control, their fundamental weakness would be put on display.
Well, thanks for joining me today, Ali.
You're very welcome.
I've been speaking with Ali Abu Nima, Palestinian journalist and co-founder of the Electronic Intifada, where his commentaries regularly appear.
You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.